This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
So this week, I got to sit down with Billy McFarland, the guy behind Fyre Festival, the most famous event that never happened, or whatever they call it. If you didn't listen to that, go back to YouTube or, you know, to Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to it, watch it. It's kind of fascinating. He was one of the guys that was on my bucket list when I started this show. Someone who was reduced to a headline, and I wanted to hear from the horse's mouth why he did what he did and what he's doing now. So it's been really interesting because he got out of jail and he tried to do Fyre Festival 2, and it most recently fell apart again, which is like incredibly hard to do, I would think. I would think you spend 4 years in jail thinking about how you're going to resurrect yourself, how you're going to make it happen, and it fell apart. Anyways, today I interview a guy named Steven, who's known as Old Man Liver, who is one of the guys who tried to buy the brand of Fyre Festival, which is shocking to me because how is it even worth anything? But when you sit down and talk to this guy who has over 30 years of experience in the events industry and entertainment industry, you realize that there is potential there, why he did it, the conversations and the negotiations that happened between the two, and how it fell apart. And it's completely fascinating. I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you haven't gone to see the Netflix documentary of Fyre Festival, you should, so you get, you know, informed on what this whole conversation is about. But I would be shocked if you don't know what we're talking about. So thank you so much again for listening. I appreciate everything you guys do for us. Make sure you leave a review, subscribe. But, you know, I loved this episode with Old Man Liver, and I hope you do too. Steven, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you all the way from Las Vegas?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
I'm so happy you're here. So, Old Man Liver, where'd you come up with a name like that?
Well, so I was in the Los Angeles music scene for 2 decades, and I kind of grew up there, so to speak, even though I'm originally from Louisiana. But when I turned 30, being in the music industry, you're kind of, you know, the ageism thing starts to hit and people started going, oh, you're going to keep doing this pop and rock stuff in your 30s and 40s. I'm like, well, hell, you know, like B.B. King was, you know, still doing club gigs till his 80s and Les Paul till his 90s. And not that I put myself in that category of talent, but just the attitude of playing till you die, I've always liked. So I was like, so I started a side project called Old Man Liver that was separate from my regular band called Early Dawn. And we started doing some big shows at prominent venues in Los Angeles, like the Viper Room, the Whiskey A Go-Go, the Roxy Theater, the Troubadour, all that stuff. And it gained some notoriety. And originally I'd called the band Old Man Liver, but kind of like the Alice Cooper scenario, everyone just started calling me that. And now we have a whiskey called Old Man Liver American Whiskey. We've got a beer, a hot sauce, a jerky, and hoping to open some bars under the Old Man Liver brand too. So
that's amazing. So you really started as an artist and for your love of music, and then you branded out into different, you moved out into different brands.
Yeah. So it really, it's really expanded over the years, and people joke because a lot of people are just hearing about it for the first time. So they'll be like, oh, what's it like to be an overnight success? I'm like, well, it started this thing like 25 years ago. Right. So there's that.
Right.
And, you know, but it is kind of cool to see it, you know, transform and become all these other things. And the attitude, like, we just like to make fun of ourselves, but then the products are good and high quality. And it seems to be a working match. And we still do the gigs still. You know, I go back to my roots with the live music, and we still do Old Man Liver shows as well to this day. I've got one on April 19th at the Pioneer Saloon right outside of Las Vegas.
Amazing. Speaking of the Pioneer Saloon, now that's your place, right?
It is. Yeah. It's the oldest bar in all the Las Vegas area. So it comes with, you know, 113 years of history.
Wow.
And I've had it the last 5 years, and I like to feel like I've made my mark on it too, which includes like stepping up the live music and stuff that I enjoy too.
Wow. So yeah, I read that you've been in the entertainment industry for over 30 years or whatever it's been now, long time. What's been some of the biggest acts that you've brought in? Because I know now you're in the entertainment and events business in general. So what are some acts that you bring in, or at least to that saloon?
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I mean, we started in 1999 doing a breast cancer benefit called Breastfest, which at the time, strangely enough, even though it was the 90s, was controversial because it had breast in the name. So we had MTV and all the, you know, national exposure through this thing. And we had brought in Third Eye Blind and Duncan Sheik, who were really big acts at the time.
Wow.
And from there, that's where we started. And now we've moved it to Las Vegas, but we're still doing it. And then we also held a Fallout fan celebrations for basically a party for fans of the Fallout video games and the Amazon show. And we had stars like Walton Goggins and Wayne Newton come to our event this past November. So it's been a fun ride over the years with different, some organizing our own events, some, you know, participating. I got my business hat on. Other times it's the guitar player hat. And I like the creativity and the business side of both of them. And I've got a record company as well called Artist Addiction Records. And we do like TV and film soundtracks, like we did the Saw movies, NCIS, Charm, Stomp the Yard, stuff like that. So I enjoy both sides of the music industry.
Wow, that's amazing. So I want to give a little plug because I know you have a whiskey and a beer line. And I saw you just launched Nuclear Liquid. What is that?
Yeah, so especially post-apocalyptic fans, they love anything that relates to the wasteland, you know, especially these Fallout fans. It's a hoot. And luckily, they give me credit for bringing the community together with these annual events, which are now on the East Coast and the West Coast. So I wanted to start I already had a whiskey for the last 6 years, but I'm like, let's do something fun that really connects with this fan audience. And it's a vodka, but we have to call it Nuclear Liquid because we added a green tinge to it. So it looks like it's glowing and radiated and nuclear.
Oh, wow.
And it's actually made with spring water from Good Springs, Nevada, which is where the Fallout New Vegas video game starts. So I did a vodka and then a bourbon called Wasteland Whiskey that also is made from spring water from Good Springs, Nevada, but also includes pieces of wood from the Pioneer Saloon property itself. So people that are enthusiastic about the Pioneer Saloon or the town of Good Springs through this video game can actually drink part of the property. So I thought that was kind of cool. Yeah. And it was a challenge because our distillery is in North Carolina and we're based on the West Coast. So we literally had to ship water across the country, which, could have been probably its own reality show episode in its own right, but it all turned out great and people love it. And it's brand new. And so in the states that we're in, which are like Nevada, California, New York, Florida, West Virginia, North Carolina, we can start carrying those at restaurants and bars and so forth. And then people can order it online as well.
I'm curious, how hard is it to create a liquor brand? Because so many people want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I learned there's a reason that most people don't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And thank God I didn't know, as they call it, the barriers to entry, or I might not have done it. But it was one of these things. My partner goes, you know, hey, we got to, you know, she's like, Old Man Liver needs that after the music and everything else. She's like, Old Man Liver needs a whiskey. Old Man Liver needs a bar. And so we keep propelling ourselves and all these things. But the whiskey, you know, she said, give me 3 months to find a distiller that will make the flavor you want and the proof you want.
Yeah.
And sure enough, she pulled it off. Amazingly enough, that's my partner, Mama Tess. Mm-hmm. She, and amazingly, we worked for a year on it and got the oaky, smoky, and a tiny bit spicy flavor profile we were going for. Mm-hmm. But then I wanted it to be 90 proof. So you can say I can say you get more bang for your buck than Jim or Jack at 80 proof or whatever. So, but I didn't know a lot of the laws date back to Prohibition. Mm-hmm. So you have to go state by state. And first you have to get legal in the state, which is a process. And then you have to get a distributor in the state, which is also a process. Then you can go after the bars and restaurants and liquor stores, which is also a process because no one wants to try anything new.
Right.
You know, they know Jack Daniels and the big name sell. So why take risk on a small mom and pop operation? And thank God we've, you know, broken through that in a few states. But you still, it's a process. And some states are harder than others. You know, ironically, California and New York are easy to get into, where Texas and Live Free or Die New Hampshire are very difficult states.
Interesting.
And then some of them have state liquor stores, and you have to, amazingly, like Pennsylvania has a really interesting process where you got to send them a whole case of liquor for them to test. And then like five people decide on whether it's going to be introduced to the entire state or not.
Wow.
And you don't get your liquor back nor the $500 application fee. So if they don't go for it, you know, you're kind of screwed. But I'm sure they have a good time on this stuff.
Yeah. Or they're filling their, you know, whatever place they like with free liquor, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They probably, I'd love to see the bars in their houses at home. It's got to be phenomenal. So it's kind of like communist, in my opinion, the way the thing works. But, and every state is the same, because they want, you have to go through a distributor. You can't just sell it on your own, which is bizarre. It's the only industry I'm in where you can't create something and just sell it. So the states keep it going this way because they get a markup from the distributor. So by the time you're already taxed at the distillery, of course, you're taxed with sales tax when someone when you buy a cocktail, but then you're also taxed by the distributor, by generally 30%, and then by the state, you know, another 30%. So really, a cocktail that you order at a bar should be like half the price of what it is.
Right.
But there's so many taxes involved and so much bureaucracy. It's a nightmare. So thank God I didn't know about all that going into it. But now, you know, it's a lot of fun, and we just hooked up with a group of liquor stores in Vegas called Lee's Liquor. And that's one of the biggest chains in one of the biggest cities that we're in, to start carrying us. So we're still getting out of the gate here. So,
oh, that's amazing. You can, or you can't do direct to consumer? Like, can you sell it online?
What's funny is, like, the Pioneer Saloon, for the first 6 months that I owned it, I couldn't carry my own whiskey because we didn't have a distributor in Nevada yet. So that's the irony. We had to wait to find a distributor and then buy it from that distributor. So like one company, our butter popcorn company, you know, sells it to the distributor, and then Pioneer Saloon has to buy it from that distributor.
Oh, God.
And so it's a.
But can you, like, at your festivals or whatever, can you have a pop up there and sell it, or can you?
Yeah,
have
as
it
long
at
as
the
we're
bars?
Legal. So ironically, we're throwing a post-apocalyptic celebration in West Virginia in May 2nd and 3rd, called Wasteland Jamboree. And we just got legal in that state just in time. And now bars and restaurants can go through the distribution process over there to order it and to carry it. But if we had done the event in a state that we weren't legal or didn't have a distributor, we wouldn't be able to sell it.
Yeah. I'm curious, last question on this topic, but how hard it is, like, is the name of it so important? Because that's what people are going to recognize and see. Like, you have some really interesting names. Busty Blonde Golden Ale. Love it.
Oh, yeah. We got to have fun with this stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, do you like sit there for hours thinking of what people are, you know, what people are going to like, or what people will think is cheesy, or like, I don't know. How do you think of an
name? What we do is we have a lot of my partner, Mama Tess, and I have a lot of inside jokes together that we tend to turn into projects. And if they don't work, at least we can laugh that we know what the meaning behind it is.
Yeah.
In fact, we have this this Red Menace spice mix that came about when Mama Tess created a cocktail called the Red Menace. That's like a version of the Bloody Mary, but with my whiskey instead of vodka, which is now becoming trendy. But 6 years ago, it was unheard of. So she had to make a different spice than the normal celery based seasoning that you'd have in a Bloody Mary.
Sure.
And people love that spice so much that they started, like, our photographer took it home, our publicist took it home. People started, you know, buying it separately and sending pictures of their Thanksgiving turkeys done in it. And all this, you know, like, you put it on seafood, steak, it's kind of becoming a Lowry's or Tony Shasheries. And the funny thing is, it all came back to, we called it the Red Menace, because in my book, I refer to the Red Menace as a woman's period. And So it has a funny background that if it never sold one item, we'd still laugh at where the name came from. So we're really entertaining ourselves first and hoping someone else enjoys the party as well. And so far that's occurred because we haven't had one product that hasn't worked so far under the Old Man Liver umbrella. And obviously by the name, you know, it's funny and we make fun of ourselves. But like I said, the products are really high quality and flavorful and good. And that seems to be working and people get the sense of humor. If you don't get it, you don't get it. I understand. We had a distributor on the East Coast, it goes, yeah, I don't really understand the Old Man Liver concept. If you can explain it to me, and my partner's always said, if you need it explained, you don't get the sense of humor. It's not for you.
I got that. Yes, I totally agree. All right, so I want to get into the events and the festivals you do now, which is why I've had you on, and we'll get to that in a second. But my husband owns 5 companies that have to do with large event production, but in the security side of things, like we're talking about the Olympics, Formula One, Google, NVIDIA, things like that. I know how hard it is to get even the smallest of events to the largest events built. And it seems like you guys have gotten into the event space. Can you talk a little bit about your background in events, event planning, what goes into events as we lead into the conversation that I've, that we're going to talk about, which is the fact that you were entertaining buying a brand that was more well-known.
That's correct. Yeah. So I've always, generally I've created my own events out of ideas, and even the breast fest thing came about in the 90s when my mom had breast cancer and I didn't have any money. So at the time in LA, there were all these charities, but they were like rich person charities where you got to dress up in a tux and go to a boring dinner and donate or whatever. And I didn't have any money. So I'm like, how can I help with the breast cancer cause and awareness and fundraising for a cure and all that without it being one of these stuffy dinners that I can't afford to put on? And I'm like, well, rock is in my background, so let's do a rock concert. Mm-hmm. And right away from year one, luckily, because of the name, people thought it was funny. And God forget, you have the name breast and breast fest, even though it's for breast cancer. A lot of people jumped on, and even like Ozzy Osbourne couldn't do the event. But he donated he and Sharon have donated a lot of years to it, even when they can't perform. Wow. But that one got some attention from year one. But in general, you're building stuff from scratch. So a lot of times with a new event, you got to do it, and you got to first just do it with even if 10 people show up.
Right.
Then if you're getting pictures and video, then you can show people what it's about. Because if it's a unique idea, they're not going to know from the beginning. They're like, what's this breast fest? Is that a porn convention or something? No, it's a charity event, blah, blah, blah. So like we do another event called Mojave Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. And it's out here on the West Coast because I'm originally from Louisiana. Mardi Gras is a big holiday in Louisiana. And I everywhere else I've moved, it's annoyed me that you don't get off work and school and all that kind of stuff for Mardi Gras because it's a great holiday.
Yeah.
And so I brought it out to the West Coast in the first year. We had, a decent people come out, but then every year, more and more people come out for it because they see pictures online and they go, and when you can start adding stuff, and eventually we started flying out crawfish from New Orleans and have an authentic gumbo and Pat O'Brien's hurricanes and beignets and all this stuff. And last year we added a parade to the event. And so it's just, slowly building year after year. And that's generally how stuff happens. Now with the initial Fallout fan celebration, I thought it was going to take time to build too, because when I took over the Pioneer Saloon, we knew a lot about its history and there's a lot of things it's famous for, but I didn't really understand the background of it being in a video game and how popular this video game is, and called Fallout New Vegas. Mm-hmm. And people started coming around every day, and I felt like we were disappointing them because we just have a little Xbox game on the wall or whatever. And I'm like, let's dedicate a shrine, a side of this dining room to just Fallout fans. And then it became like, let's see if they want to get together for National Video Game Day. And we were expecting, being realistic, we're like maybe 20 to 50 people, 100 at best. And we had 1,000 people show up the first year. And then it's just, you know, gone on from there. We had to cap it at like 8,000 people this last one.
Wow.
Because it just got too much. People were buying tickets at the last minute. We didn't have enough buses and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes things grow quickly. Sometimes they take some time. But to your point and what your husband knows, it, there's a lot of background work that goes into these things. And, you know, Wayne Newton and Walton Goggins don't just stumble on the event, even though you want to create the effect that they do in some right. cases to surprise fans and that kind of thing. So a lot of man hours goes into it. And in some cases, we have big organizations that help us strategically with these events. In the case of like the Fallout event that we do, we have a hierarchy, a whole team of mega fan volunteers that basically spend year round to help us put this thing on.
Right.
So there's always a lot of, even though I'm in the face of a lot of these events, there's always a lot that goes into it. And then I started the Nevada Blues Festival just because I saw a need for it. Being from LA, I was used to like, you know, jazz blues festivals in Long Beach and New Orleans has Jazz Fest and all these other places I lived. I'm like, why isn't there like a blues thing out here in Vegas that's really big and well known? And there's a couple events, but nothing, you know, I was like, there needs to be a state Nevada Blues Festival. And if no one else is going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Right.
And so once again, that's one that just kind of builds and has more and more people each year. But a lot of logistics goes into things. And
how long is the appropriate time to start planning in advance for these kind of events?
Yeah, about a year in general is right. ideal. Now we challenge ourselves. And I always go back to, you know, some of these events that were really big in like the 80s, like Live Aid was done primarily in like 2 months.
Yeah.
So it can be done. But in general, you want about a year to plan things out, especially in areas like Las Vegas that has a very serious process of going through to throw an event like we do. And it's a lot of, there's licensing requirements, permitting, all stuff has to be done in advance. So I'd give it a year if you're going to try to plan something.
So when did you first hear about FIRE or FIRE Festival? This episode is sponsored by OHO. Are you having trouble sleeping? I know that feeling. Your body is exhausted, but your mind just won't shut off. You're tossing, turning, checking the clock, and then you wake up the next day feeling even worse. That's why I want to tell you about OHO and their Blackberry Hush gummies, because this isn't just another sleep aid. It's something I've actually made part of my nighttime routine. These gummies are formulated with a really thoughtful blend of THC, CBD, and CBN. So instead of knocking you out, they actually help your body naturally ease into sleep. You take one, or I personally take only half, but about 30 minutes before bed. And what I love is there's no groggy, heavy feeling the next morning, just real deep sleep, and you wake up actually feeling refreshed. So if you're struggling to fall asleep or stay asleep, you need to try this. Go to weareoho.com. That's weareoho.com and use the code MISS15 for 15% off. Trust me, your sleep will thank you.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
So we're like everybody else where we, you know, just caught it as a Netflix documentary and we're like that, and even, you know, my partner, I was mentioning Mama Tess, she actually, you know, talked about back in the day before I met her, she was actually going to go to the event and looked into buying tickets and all that stuff. I had never heard of it until I saw it on Netflix. I would never have just, I wouldn't have been that audience to buy a ticket anyway without knowing the lineup just to be cool or whatever people are buying tickets for. So for me, it was something I stumbled upon. And like I said, normally I like to start my own creations from scratch. Mm-hmm. But Pioneer Saloon was a big jump for me to buy a pre-existing business, which I had never done before. I've sold businesses, but I've never bought businesses.
Yeah.
So now I'm a little more open to if I think I can do something with a brand, I'm like, okay, that has a long, there's a lot of potential there in that brand. And now I'm more open to being able to buy into these things, these right. situations.
And maybe make it more than what it is.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's the case with, you know, Pioneer Saloon. We'd go and visit it and we're like, oh, this could be, you know, what if they did this? Or what if this was, that could be so much bigger and cooler and not, you know, and you see the potential. And then when something becomes an opportunity, you kind of have to jump at it. And in the case with the Pioneer Saloon, a lot of people were vying for it, from big corporations to investment groups. And I never thought in a million years I would get it. But it was one of these weird things where, even though I'm not a big fate guy, I felt like it picked me because I started dreaming about it. And I was like, I wake up, I'm like, honey, I've got to have this. I don't know why. It's just in my soul. And I felt like, and all of a sudden all the other offers fell through and dropped out. And it came to me. I'm like, all right, let's make this happen. But the Fyre Festival was one that I definitely, with my experience and my partner's experience in throwing big events, I wasn't worried about, I wouldn't have had the same challenges, I don't think, in throwing a similar event on an island somewhere in the Caribbean and such.
Right. It was very similar to what you just explained. I had never heard of Fyre Festival until I saw the documentary on Netflix. And it's interesting because I was in that industry. I mean, I opened up, I think, 18 different nightclubs. You know, I went to St. Bart's and worked there for 6 months, bringing in events, all sorts of things. And I never even heard of it or Billy McFarland. So it was interesting when it came out. I'm like, how did I miss this? But I also was not the target audience. I mean, Billy right now is, I think, you know, I had him on the show this week. I think he says he's 36 now. I'm 51. So I guess we're not in that age range. And also everything.
Old man liver either.
Yeah. So everything that he put out, and still to this day, is very cryptic. And that's a whole different generation where they, you know, think it's cool. You know, they started with that yellow square, orange square, and everyone was like, oh, I have to be there. This is going to be cool. For me, I look at stuff, I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, that's not even for me, right? I need a little more detail and I need to know, like, who's right. going to be there, where I'm going, what's happening. So, but I found the documentary fascinating. It was very interesting, obviously, when he went to jail and this became a very serious issue, right? For people that have listened to the episode this week, we know that he got out after 4 years when he was sentenced to 6 and immediately kind of went right back to it, promoting he was going to do Fyre 2, which I think a lot of people thought was crazy, didn't understand. And to shorten that conversation, it did not happen. And he was going to do it in Mexico. It fell through. His version is very interesting because I keep reading everywhere that, you know, people still think he's a fraud and that, you know, he was making up stuff. His version to me was that, you know, there's plenty of evidence that even the Mexican officials had put out stuff on their Instagram showing that they had made this deal and they were excited to have them in. But then when they were challenged by the media, they kind of pulled out. So who really knows? And I guess they're making a documentary about it and we're going to find out about it. But, you know, I'm curious for you, because I heard you talk about the fact that you were in negotiations with him and his team to buy the brand Fyre. Fyre Festival or Fyre? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
And in fact, he doesn't necessarily, we had to look into all that too, because you've got to do your due diligence when you're looking into this stuff. And it's like, who really owns the trademark? And it was a process, but he has the trademark on the festival side of things, but you can still use Fyre brands with other non-related industries and such. So his thing was owning the festival brand. And he thought the Netflix thing put him over the top, where it was like a multi-million dollar type of a brand.
Right.
And it turned out to not be true after, you know, everything that's transpired.
Right. Well, but what's crazy about that is, and my question to you is, where did you see the value? Because it was two events that didn't go off and it's associated with somebody that people think is fraudulent. So I was curious, you know, obviously there's upside to it because you could take something and actually make it work and then you can get a ton of press automatically from it. That part I got, but is that why you saw the value in it?
Yeah, it was one of these things where, just like the Pioneer Saloon, we saw the potential of it and we're like, the idea could have been cool. A bunch of bands out on an island with models and all this stuff. The marketing was fantastic. And the branding was fantastic. The execution was non-existent. Right. And so one thing we're good at is doing things and executing. Everyone has ideas, right? But who follows up on those is a whole nother ball game. And that's where you get the 1% of people that have ideas that actually execute. So, I saw the potential of the brand right away, because I'm like, a lot of people can't touch a brand like that when it's associated with fraud and all this kind of stuff. But Old Man Liver brand, that's right up my alley. So I'm like, I wanted to go out and go, I'm going to do what Billy couldn't pull off and do it right and do it awesome. And it would already have the built-in publicity from the Netflix documentary. And we're like, yeah, probably somebody would want to do one on the second one. So like, but then, obviously he had, and we followed the whole thing with him trying to do the Mexico one. And that was even painful too, because we have a property in Belize that we're like, oh, we could do this thing tomorrow in Belize and with everyone we know over there and pull it off without a problem with getting the government approvals and the permits and all that kind of stuff. So it was painful to see that not being able to be pulled off as well. And eventually it got to a point where he said, I think he had to admit to himself that he can't execute it. And that's when he put it online that, hey, I'm going to sell this thing. And the funny thing is the page that was online was hilarious, because it's like this. Normally you'd have this, like 15 page thing with legal, got to sign and check a box to agree to all the legal fine print and all that stuff. This was like a one page thing. Give me your idea and how much you'll pay. And you couldn't, even the amount you put in, you couldn't even put a decimal point in there. It was like, or a dollar sign. Like the whole thing was like a, amateurish at best.
Right.
I don't even know, like someone's great grandma that's not tech savvy at all could have put together a better website to sell a brand that's supposed to be a high end brand. So it was funny, and I just put in 100,000 in the thing. I couldn't put a comma or a dollar sign. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I hope they get that and they don't read that it's a million or 10 right. bucks or whatever.
Right.
But that was my bid for it, was $100,000. Cause when we were following the thing, because we are in the festival industry and we never now it's a big joke when we do an event, like we don't want to, especially if it's a new event, like this Wasteland Jamboree we're doing in West Virginia, May 2nd and 3rd. We're like, we do not want a fire festival this. We kind of use it as an adjective or adverb or whatever. Like, don't be like fire festival. Let's notify people ahead of time this change, and that's kind of our go-to.
Right, of course. Not to do. What not to do, exactly.
I put my hat in. I couldn't, not take a shot at it. It was just one of those things like Old Man Liver could get away with a controversial brand and do it right. And a lot of people are like, are you crazy? You don't want to be associated with Billy McFarlane. I'm like, does Old Man Liver give a shit? I don't think so.
How long did it take for them to respond?
So ironically, they got back with us pretty quick. And so, we started the process, and then, it became basically Billy had like three other people that bought into his fame coming out of jail. And when he said he's going to try to restart the brand, I'm guessing he gave him some kind of commission based incentive or something to join him. So this guy calls me up. I'm not going to say his name, but he was Billy's associate. And said, hey, we got your submission and it sounds interesting. Let's talk about some ideas. And at the time I was in Utah for some other stuff and I was, trying to talk to him on the phone. Now it was kind of hard to get on the phone for a while. And I'm like, okay, this already feels a little shady, but whatever, I'll stick with it and feel him out. And eventually we connected and he liked the ideas we had for it. And said, okay, we'll see what happens. And then I don't know if a few other things fell through and then knocked to us way more serious, like we're ready to move forward with your bid and go from there.
Guys, I hope you're enjoying my interview with Old Man Liver. This gets super juicy, so juicy that we have to put it behind a paywall. So if you want to listen to the rest of this, go to patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Don't forget, misunderstood is spelled M-I-S-S. Understood. The link is in the description below.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.